podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Ever wonder what it takes to go from being an amateur to professional in sport? Welcome to An Athlete's Blueprint, the podcast that uncovers the secrets of champions, to let you know what it really takes to win a medal or break a record. Speaking to players and coaches, I capture insights from the training ground to the world stage, having the conversations normally kept behind closed doors. An Athlete's Blueprint is the podcast for sports enthusiasts starting out or those chasing the next podium. Get ready to rethink what you know about competing. Let's meet Kirsty Batten, a Premiership rugby player for the Newbury Blues. In this episode, we cover how to get started in women's rugby, find out about pre-game rituals, learn about the intensity of the competitive matches, find out about the mindset to go undefeated for an entire season, and how she balances the 9-to-5 with her sporting career. Let's meet Kirsty.
So, can you sort of tell us a little bit about rugby and why you chose to get into it?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a strange story. I was at university in my first year of uni, and my friend wanted to give it a go, and she basically just said, can you come along with me to a training session? And I happened to not have any plans that night. So I said, yeah, okay, fine. And I went to a training session, and for the first time ever, I'd like normally tried sports and was a bit rubbish to start with and had to really work it. But I was kind of like, oh, okay, I can do this. So I went back for a few sessions, and yeah, just it escalated from there, really.
When you kind of first done that training session, what did you find that you were naturally good at straight away?
I think, first of all, I feel like my hand, I used to play a lot of football, and I was better at handling a ball with my hands than I was with my feet. I'm not very coordinated with my feet, like I run a bit weird. So I think initially that was a big sell. I was like, oh, okay, I can actually like pass and catch the ball without like fumbling and falling over it. So that was a big win, definitely. And then the contact element, I've always been like quite not like big but strong. And I always felt like a bit out of place because of that, I think, especially when I was younger. So I think like going into contact and realizing that I could like that I had like a role, I guess, like a strength that lended itself so well to rugby and to contact sport. That was like a really big sell as well, because I felt like I had a place.
And you touched on it a minute ago, playing in football. Did you find the same level of camaraderie in football and rugby, or is it different?
I think it's totally different. From my experience, I played football very young, so maybe it's different when you get older, but I found football was a lot more individual. So it was kind of as if the girls were kind of fighting against each other to be better. Whereas in rugby, it's like you need 15. We need a lot more than that. But like on a pitch at any one time, you need all 15 people to be like doing their own individual jobs well. So there's a lot less kind of like internal competition, and everyone wants the other players on the pitch with them to be playing well, not just for themselves to be shining, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that is, I can completely relate. I mean, I'm a big football fan, and there is times when, you know, commentators or whatever will say that the player is playing for themselves rather than the team. So yeah. I can completely understand that. And when you were first playing your first kind of competitive matches or sort of test matches, how did you find that experience?
Scary, really scary. I'd not played any kind of like competitive sport for quite a while. I'd done a bit of rowing, so I'd done a few races, and that was that was pretty intense. But yeah, I think being like out on a pitch and having 14 other people who are like entirely reliant on you not making a mistake and doing your job well is really intimidating, but also a really like empowering thing to do as well. So there's kind of two sides of it. And I think now that I'm used to it, I like thrive off of that pressure. And I love the fact that I can kind of be there for my teammates. Whereas, yeah, I think to start with, definitely, I was just terrified.
Yeah, I can imagine, like, someone just sort of running towards you, people screaming pass. Like, I don't know, especially, I think the difference is like, in rugby, you're going to eventually hit the floor, right? Whereas in football, you may or may not, and it's not as dramatic. But it feels like in rugby, it's like, you're going to get bundled, or you're going to get, you know, there's a bit more risk associated with, you know, it's going to be painful, is what I'm trying to get at. So that's probably going through your mind as well. What was kind of your pre-game rituals for those first sort of competitive matches that you had?
I think really early, no, I didn't really know anything about it. Now I'm like I have lucky pants and lucky socks. And I eat the same breakfast before every game. I do the same like morning things. Yeah, exactly. But I think early on, I didn't really understand. I think I would try and fuel up, because I remembered from rowing that we used to like carb load the night before a race. So before a game, I would like try and carb load, but I didn't really know enough about nutrition and that kind of thing at the time to, I guess, do anything that was really valuable. Thankfully, I know a little bit more about it now.
So how does that affect your energy and your output nowadays?
Massively, yeah. I think knowing kind of what I need to put into my body at what times in order to be ready for a game has been really valuable. We've had a nutritionist who's come into the club and talked to us, like talked to the team about how we can properly fuel up. And we're lucky enough to have someone who has a degree in nutrition in the team. And the difference is, starting the game with like as much energy and kind of feeling as like physically ready as you can possibly be, but then also throughout the game, like not having those like drops in energy like at halftime when you just kind of like slump, and then recovery as well has been so much better since we've had that advice. And I'm vegan and also a woman, which are two things that have like a big impact on energy, because hormones can have like a really big impact on your energy levels and your strength and your likelihood to get injured. But then also a vegan diet can impact those things, depending on kind of how you take the vegan diet, because some people are vegan and still manage to get loads and loads of protein in, but a lot of like classic vegan recipes that people eat are like low in protein and kind of don't necessarily get the kind of strength building amount of protein that you need, so like the 1.5 times body weight amount. So having like knowing more about that kind of thing has been so valuable.
What's it like having a team talk at halftime when you're losing?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I think it depends on the coach. So I've had like a few different coaches and a few different teams that have had different attitudes. So some will go in really hard and they'll kind of really like, this isn't good enough, like aggression, I guess, like negativity. Like personally, I don't like really react well to that like kind of feedback. I'm quite like a carrot girl rather than a stick girl, so I prefer like the attitude of like, we know we can do better personally. And I've had coaches like that as well. So, yeah, I think it massively depends on the coach and the captain. Our current captain, she would definitely probably go towards the kind of, like, girls, we're letting ourselves down. Like, this is not good enough. We're not playing the way that we know we can play, which works well for, like, quite a lot of us, I think, actually, because, you don't want to be letting yourself down. You don't want to be letting the side down. So, I think that honesty is really important. It's hard, especially if you're losing a game that you were expecting to win. I've been in that situation a couple of times, thankfully not too many. But I think it's different when, say, like you're in a new league and you're kind of near the bottom of the table and you're playing top of the league, for example. That's a different kind of story. You just look for the little wins. So that's I've been in that situation a few times where we're losing, but actually you're looking for like the situations where maybe your flanker one up their flanker, or you want a penalty on their scrum. Like you would take that as a win because your scrum was better than theirs for that like period of time. It depends on the situation.
Do you fixate on the game afterwards, or are you able to let it go?
Yeah, I do have a tendency to fixate, definitely. I literally find myself we normally play on a Sunday, and I'll find myself on a Sunday night just like lying in bed replaying all the things that I've done in that game, which can be like just really not helpful, to be honest with you. I try not to do it now, but I just can't help it. My brain will just like, and it won't be the things that I've done well, it'll be the things that I've done badly, obviously. I'll just be like replaying them like an action replay in my head.
I think we're pre-programmed to be like that though, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's almost innate. And what's it like when, you know, you're on the bus after that win, or however you travel to games, you know, what's that like? What's that atmosphere like?
It's pretty good. Normally there's a lot of singing, and we have one particular girl on the team who we call our Trolley Dolly. So she has like a little trolley that she wheels down the coach, and it's full of like weird booze. It's never like normal drinks. It's like some tequila that she found in like Mexico, or like ouzo, or like, I don't know, some like really cheap version of wine that's like ridiculously strong and tastes like paint stripper. And she'll just come down with this, and then there's some non-alcoholic options as well, because there are quite a few people on the team that don't drink, me being one of them now actually. But she'll like wheel them down the middle of the corridor and be like, anything from the trolley, dears, and everyone just kind of like, yeah, take something. If it's a long journey, we'll play Take Me Out with the lights in the coach. So someone has to like come down. And there's a girl on the team that pretends to be good. Paddy McGuinness. And yeah, it's really good fun.
That's awesome. And how do you respond to not making the team when you've trained all week, or being a substitute?
Yeah, it's really hard. I've had like quite a few situations, especially earlier on in my career at Newbury, where that was the case. I've always had coaches that are quite good at like calling you up to talk to you about it, or saying like, you know, open door policy, if you want to ask me about why you might not have made the team, then that's fine. So I'd always have that conversation with them. What can I do differently? There have been situations where I've disagreed. I'm sure like any athlete has, you have to have that like natural confidence, don't you? I think otherwise you don't get very far. So there'll always be situations where you maybe think, actually, I think I would have done better in this game than X person that's on the team. I guess what you have to do is just really clarify what it is that coach wants like from you that you're not currently giving them, in order to make it onto that team or get that starting shirt. And then all you can do is just like hammer down on that particular thing, I guess, or if there's two or three things. That's what I tend to do, because it just gives me, it shifts my focus a little bit, like from just being upset about it to like, okay, well, this is just going to motivate me to do more of that thing.
I hear that. And what happens when, do you have kind of any friendly sort of rivalry in the team if someone plays in your position? You know, say if someone new has joined the team and they've come to play in your position, does that fire you up, or does that kind of worry you?
Yeah, that's happened a lot, actually. Not so much as recently, because I've been playing front row, and less people want to play front row because it's a bit of a nasty place to be at times. But when I was a flanker, that's like a really popular position that people want to play. So it happened a lot. I guess it depends. So there was one situation where when I was playing for Newbury, someone came in who played flanker at Premiership level. And at the time, we were very top level of rugby, down to the third to come and play, because she wanted to take a step back but still play. So I was immediately like, oh, that's my starting shirt gone, I'm done, which was really hard. So I think that actually did hit me pretty hard. But at the same time, you can either get really down about it, or you can motivate yourself to find another way to ensure that you still get that starting shirt. And for me, my coach had already approached me and said, like, I think you would do well in the front row with some kind of like front row training. So I guess I took that opportunity then to embrace that and give that a go. And then now we always both get a starting shirt, because I'll get a starting shirt in the front row and she gets a starting shirt in the back row. I play better at front row than I ever did like at back row. So it was the best move I could have made.
It's sort of a happy coincidence. Do you have any sort of sporting heroes? Doesn't have to be in rugby. You know, who do you look up to?
That's a good question. I think people ask a lot about the like the role models side of things. I don't think that I had necessarily any role models, but I think to kind of, I guess, probably change your question slightly. So sorry. But I think that's probably something that I wish I had had when I was younger. Like, I wish there were more female sporting role models around. I know there were, like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I wish there were more, so that maybe I could have seen myself in one of them, because I think the popular sporting, like, female sporting heroes that were around when I was young, there certainly weren't any in rugby that I knew of, because women's rugby just like didn't have the platform that it has today and the platform that I hope it has in the future. And even for women's football, it wasn't anywhere near where it is now. So I guess I took my role models from like the teams that I played in rather than watching ones on TV and that kind of thing.
See, I think that's a really beautiful thing, really, because it's like you're inspired by just, you know, everyday people, really, which is really warm, I think, and really, yeah, I think it's a really lovely thing, to be honest, because it's difficult to kind of like live up to the your heroes, right, or emulate them, but
true,
people that you just interact with all the time and taking the positives and seeing the light in people is really nice. That's really cool. So last season, you had quite a few wins. How is this season? Are you still on a winning run?
Not so much, sadly. We've had like a difficult season, partly because we've had a lot of injuries. So we were really fortunate last season that we went pretty much through the whole season with barely any injuries. We've had a lot of injuries to key players. We've had a couple of players out completely for the whole season. I've been out for quite a lot of this season for an operation that I had to have. And yeah, a couple of other people have had like similar scenarios, especially like key starting players. We've also had a lot of new people come in, and they're really talented rugby players. But obviously with any team, any sporting team, it takes a while for like new talent to settle in and kind of like learn the way that the team plays, or even like if that needs to change, for that to change. And then obviously we've also taken a massive step up. So because of women's rugby's size in terms of like in the UK, the difference between like leagues is big. The step up is big. It's not kind of as simple as like when you have, like, I suppose like the men's football league is a good example because there's so many. When you get promoted from one to the other, I imagine that the step up, especially at grassroots, isn't as big. But for us, the difference between Championship 2 and Championship 1 is pretty hefty. So the change in kind of like the teams that we're playing against is obviously, yeah, pretty massive. I think that's been hard for some people. It's been a really good challenge at the same time. But yeah, unfortunately, we are seeing a kind of second bottom at the moment. And we're in a bit of a weird situation where we're not sure if we're going to get relegated. We hope we won't. We need to win a couple more in order to secure not getting relegated. But at the same time, there's been a few teams in the league that have broken some rules that like normally would mean that they get relegated. So we're not sure if we might be saved by the fact that these other teams that are winning games are actually breaking the rules. Yes, and a lot of the teams at Championship 1 borrow players from Premiership, so that is allowed and legal within certain like regulations. But obviously, that also makes it really difficult. We don't have any Premiership players in our team, whereas like the majority of the other teams in Championship 1 do. So what they essentially do is the players that are Premiership but usually on the bench, they'll borrow those players essentially. So they're playing down, which is allowed at Championship 1 but not at other grassroots levels of rugby, so that can be hard. Like, some of them are like internationals, which obviously is like difficult.
Yeah, I was gonna say that doesn't quite often happen in many other sports, really, does it, that you'd have a mix and blend of different qualities, you know, contributing to a game all at once. You know, it's usually, you know, all top tier, then, do you know what I mean? It's all,
yeah,
you kind of stick within your category, don't you?
I think it's quite unique to women's rugby and women's Championship 1 rugby especially, because it's like a where women's rugby is not kind of fully professional yet. It's like it's this weird kind of middle ground where in any other sport, like Championship One would be considered semi-professional or even maybe professional, but because of the like youth of professional rugby and like for women and even the youth of professional rugby for men, it's not been around for that long. We're like classed as grassroots, but then it's like on the border of professional, semi-professional. So it's, there's a lot of nuances.
Hopefully as the game develops and, you know, if things become formalized, then yeah, there'll be less ambiguity around kind of that, that sort of issue, if you want to call it that, within the sport. And yeah, as I say, just picking up on another thing. So, you know, be it that this is a semi-pro sport, how do you balance kind of your 9-to-5 and just your usual work and life commitments around the game?
That is a really good question, actually, with much difficulty. I think a lot of people in my life would probably say, I think a lot of people would probably say that I guess prioritize rugby a lot or prioritize my training. I guess you kind of have to if you're like really committed. Sometimes you have to not go out on a weekend because you need to fit your training in, or not like attend that social event or leave that social event early, or arrive late because you've had to get into the gym and do your session. But I guess like if I was going to give someone advice on doing it, it would be to like be clever and combine your training as much as possible. So I'll go up early to our training sessions at the club to get in some fitness or plyometrics or like sprint training, or if I'm recovering from an injury, I'll go up early and do whatever kind of recovery I need to work on at the time from my physios have given me. If I'm doing a full body strength session, then I'll combine it with some like isometrics or like stability or like core work, because that obviously then means that I don't have to do a separate session on that. If I'm doing like a kind of HIIT session or like a spin class or something, I'll make sure that it's working at like the specific zone I need to work at to increase my fitness, for example, so that I can kind of try and get in like the different types of exercise that I need to get into a week. And then also sometimes you just have to get up early and do it, I guess. I'd say like the biggest thing I struggle with is getting enough sleep and also doing all the training that I need to do, because a lot of the time I need to get up early and get that training done before I start my work, my 9-to-5. So the biggest challenge is probably just trying to make sure I'm also getting enough sleep and enough downtime, just like doing things like watching TV with my partner or chilling out a little bit, because I am like always trying to fit in these sessions. But I do have like a list of like kind of core sessions that I need to get into a week, and then extras are just like extras, and if I don't get them done some weeks, then that's kind of okay because I just need to focus on actually having some downtime.
yeah and it's good to be compassionate to yourself at times, isn't it? Because you need to have, like, mentally you just need to sometimes let go of things, don't you, so that you can come back with more kind of compassion, more energies, you know what I mean, to do what you need to do.
Even from a performance point of view, you perform better as an athlete when you're mentally like in a good place. So actually sometimes missing that, I don't know, that HIIT session, that strength session, is actually better for my performance in the long term, because I'm in a better mental place because I've had a little bit of mental rest and done something like drawing or gone out for dinner with my partner, and that's actually been better for my head, and then I'm like kind of more in it for the next session.
I think that's really cool. I really like that. not because you kind of like take your foot off the gas, but it's good just to, the way that you've balanced it just sounds really good. What's been your favorite match or moment within your rugby career so far?
That's a good one. I guess there's a couple. I think I was lucky enough to play at Twickenham in the final of the county championships 2 years ago. that was huge. And obviously, yeah, like I guess like any English rugby player's dream to like run out on the pitch at Twickenham. So that was amazing. But also I only played for 8 minutes. So I guess I'd like to play for a little bit longer. But that would be a big one, like especially when we were kind of stood on the pitch receiving our medals. Like my partner was crying in the crowd, my mum was crying, my dad was crying, like it was really emotional. And then just like going and seeing them afterwards in the stands, like that was amazing. But then I still think I'd pick a different game just because, as you kind of mentioned earlier, like last season we had a really amazing season. We won every single game and won the league undefeated. And there was a particular game that we was like the closest we came to like not winning the game, I guess. We were literally end to end, like there was like a couple of points in it the whole way through. It was like we'd score, they'd score. Like for the crowds it must have been amazing to watch, but for us it was just like a heart attack.
It's like a psych fest.
And they were a particularly rough team, so there was a lot of swearing. We were being like, some of the people in the crowd were like spitting at us onto the pitch, and like when we'd be taking a line out, there'd be like a guy behind us being like, she can't effing throw, like just like really just giving us as much shit as they could possibly give us, basically. And our number 8 at the time, who was a prior Scottish international, she was a hell of a good player. She is a hell of a good player. She's retired now, but she was kind of like just having one, like getting one last season in before she left with us. And she basically just like sat us all down after they'd scored a try that put them like, I think, 2 points ahead. And she was like, guys, like we are so close to this, and like this is the game where like if we win this game we will be undefeated, because we are going to win the other games. Like this is the one, basically. We can decide now whether we finish this league undefeated. And we still had like 4 or 5 games left, but we knew we were in a position to win those. So I think it was very much like now or never. And we basically went back onto the pitch and literally scored like 3 phases into the next kickoff. It was like the most beautiful like break of play, like series of play. And I think it was just like hearing that from her, and like everyone just had exactly the same mindset. Like you rarely get that on a rugby pitch. There's 15 people, like everyone's kind of got a slightly different thing going on in their head, but it was like everyone had that like, okay, now or never, like mindset going on. And I think it's a lot about like our team, like despite the fact that we were really like struggling, and obviously the previous try had come from a couple of people making mistakes, missing the tackles, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So like it would have been very easy for us to get at each other and be like, well, that was your fault, now we're losing, and now we have to fight back, whereas we were winning before. Like it's really easy to like put blame on people in that situation, but that just didn't happen. And that's what Newbury like is all about. We never place blame on players. We're like, literally, I know a lot of teams say this, but we are literally like a family. And we genuinely care about each other. There's no like blame game. There's no like one player that's ever responsible for anything. So we didn't get shitty with each other. We just said like, okay, we need to step up now. Like now's the time. The next score was the one that secured the win. So it was pretty cool.
I made up for you. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not something that I can imagine doing myself in terms of, as I said before, I'd never really competed in sport. But I can, you know, when I, as an armchair fan watching football or, you know, boxing or F1 or anything like that, those kind of, I'd say, like gritty, not underdog moments, but those sort of comebacks, they're always what makes the sport, really, isn't it? What it is. It's like heart of a lion or heart of a champion or whatever they say. I think it's been really rewarding, this chat. I've learned a lot more about the sport. I've learned a lot more about kind of yourself and, you know, the impact that rugby has had on your life. So thank you.
No, you're welcome. Thank you. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you for listening to this episode of An Athlete's Blueprint. The authentic stories shared in this podcast aren't for everybody. They were just for you, a true sports enthusiast. Whether you're going into your next practice session or at the starting line for the finals, take the winner's insight from the athletes and the coaches you heard from today. Remember, this advice is only available on An Athlete's Blueprint podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.